Time being 8:15, the House Human Service Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. We do have a quorum, and so Representative Knutson moves the approval of the minutes from March 4th, 2026. Are there any additions, corrections, or changes to be made to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the minutes from Wednesday, March 4th, 2026, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion is approved, and the minutes from Wednesday, March 4th, 2026 are approved. Today we have a presentation. The entire hearing is going to be about the January 2026 report from the Office of Legislative Auditor entitled Department of Human Services Behavioral Health Administrative Grants, a performance audit. And so we will begin today with about a 15 to 20 minute presentation from the Office of Legislative Auditor, followed up with a 15 to 20 minute presentation from the Department of Human Services on their response to this, and then the rest of the committee time will be available for questions. So with that, the committee welcomes the Office of Legislative Auditor. Please introduce yourselves to the record and present your report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Lori Lyson. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Financial Audit Division. Today, we're going to present our performance audit of the Department of Human Services Behavioral Health Administration grant. So our focus was primarily on non-governmental entities for a 2.5 year period of time. And what we found is that the Behavioral Health Administration did not comply with most criteria that we tested. And we did last audit the same administration back in 2021, and we had a number of repeat findings. As a result, we did perform some of our own, what you would kind of deem as grant monitoring. So we did some site visits and we performed some reconciliations. And as a result, like I said, they did not comply with most things that we looked at. So with that, I'm really going to just turn it over to Ms. Stone, who oversaw this audit. So thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and present your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Valentina Stone, and I'm an audit director at the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And as Ms. Lyson mentioned, I was the project manager on this audit. The purpose of our audit was to answer the following questions. Did the Behavioral Health Administration administer the grants in compliance with applicable requirements? Did it establish an environment of effective internal controls? And did it provide grant managers with appropriate training? We conducted our audit work and covered the period between July 1st, 2022 and December 31st, 2024. And we focused on specifically on grants to non-governmental organizations. Behavioral Health Administration is responsible for administering grants to provide prevention, treatment, and recovery services for individuals with mental health conditions and substance use disorders. During our audit period, the BHA spent approximately $425 million on grants related to mental health, including almost $192 million issued to grants to non-governmental organizations. During 2.5 year period, the Behavioral Health Administration managed 830 grants, including approximately 590 grants issued to non-governmental organizations, such as nonprofits. In our audit, we tested request for proposals and single source grant procurement processes. We reviewed grant agreements and amendments. We tested grant payments, grant monitoring, which included financial reconciliation, progress reporting, and site visits. We also reviewed grant closeout evaluations and conducted survey of all BHA employees to determine whether the Behavioral Health Administration established appropriate internal control environment and how well employees were trained to perform their job duties as grant managers. Based on our testing, we determined that BHA did not comply with most of the criteria we tested. Our report resulted in 13 findings, including 4 repeat ones. A State policy requires agencies to issue grants using competitive bid process as much as possible. Single source grants are used when an agency awards a grant to an organization without soliciting multiple bids. To do so, agencies must document why the specific organization was the only one that was capable to perform grant duties. And if more than one entity is able to perform the grant duties, then an agency must use a competitive bid process. We found that BHA did not comply the single source grant requirements for 15 out of 24 grants we tested. Specifically, for 14 grants, BHA inappropriately bypassed competitive bid process and awarded grants to multiple entities using single source grant processes and paid $3.1 million to these grantees when other entities could have provided grant-related services. We also found that BHA awarded a grant for $1.6 million to one grantee, but it did not clearly document why this organization was the only one that could meet the grant's purpose. We also found multiple issues with payments that BHA made to grantees. The first issue was related to payments prior to execution of grant agreements. Specifically, BHA paid over $915,000 to six grantees for work performed before BHA finalized grant agreements with those grantees. Per state policies, grantees should not be paid for work before the contracts are fully executed. BHA also overpaid almost $42,000 to two grantees, and neither BHA or grantees identified these overpayments until we discovered this. We also found that BHA bypassed competitive grant award process for mental health provider supervision program and paid $2.5 million to the 13 grantees with whom BHA already had existing grants for similar program. We found a significant non-compliance with grant monitoring requirements. Per state policy, state agencies should not pay grantees with past due progress reports until grantees submit all required progress reports. We found that BHA paid over $13 million to grantees with missing or past due progress reports. State policy requires at least one monitoring visit for grants between $50,000 and $250,000 and annual monitoring visits for grants over $250,000. We reviewed 55 grant agreements issued to 18 grantees and determined that BHA should have conducted 67 monitoring visits during our audit period. BHA could not demonstrate that they conducted 27 of those visits. We also observed that the most of 40 visits that BHA conducted were not in-person visits. We also decided to conduct our own site visits. We visited eight grantees and two subcontractors for one of those grantees to observe grant-related services and tour facilities. We did provide 24-hour notice to each grantee. We had serious concerns with one grantee and two subcontractors. BHA awarded two grants to this grantee. During site visits to the grantee and its two subcontractors, we could not determine if the grantee or subcontractors provided grant-funded services. For one of the two grants, the grantee received $1.6 million. We questioned an unusually large first payment of $672,000 for a single month of work. We asked the grantee and its two subcontractors for supporting documentation, such as detailed invoices and participant records. The invoices that we received were not clear, and we could not determine how the payment rates for different types of services were developed. because the grant contract did not contain any rates, and neither grantee or subcontractors could clearly explain that. In addition, a DHS grant manager who authorized this $672,000 payment left DHS a few days after. And later that individual began providing grant-related consulting services to the grantee. We asked BHA management if anyone questioned such large payment for a single month of work. And BHA did not have an answer as grant manager has left. When we asked for participant records, one of the subcontractors told us that they were not required to keep this documentation. In addition, we also observed that each of grantees' 14 subcontractors received exactly $40,000 as a part of the $672,000 payment. However, each provided different type and quantity of work. State policies requires agencies to conduct a financial reconciliation of grantees' expenses at least once for all grants over $50,000 before making final payment to grantees. And a financial reconciliation includes comparison of expense reimbursement requests, the underlying documentation, such as payroll records, bank records, and detailed invoices. We tested 71 grant agreements and found that BHA did not have any documentation to show that they conducted those financial reconciliations for 21 of those. BHA conducted 2 financial reconciliations long after it made final payments to grantees. In one instance, it was 221 days after the final payment. And for 37 grant agreements, BHA provided very limited documentation supporting the reconciliations. It did not allow us to test the accuracy and completeness of BHA's financial reconciliations, so we decided to conduct our own independent reconciliations. We reviewed 44 individual grant payments that BHA made to 18 grantees, and we found issues with payments made to 11 out of those 18 grantees. We questioned approximately $296,000 in those payments, which was over 10% of the amount we tested. Some grantees provided very limited documentation, such as summaries of costs charged to the specific grants instead of requested detailed invoices. Some documentation did not contain the dates of service or who received the services. And some invoices had vague description of services such as consulting fees. And we provide more details on specific issues we found on pages 28 and 29 of our report. The state policy requires state agencies to consider grant applicants' past performance before awarding subsequent grants to them. To facilitate this review of grant applications, of applicants' past performance, state agencies must complete an evaluation that captures certain information, such as grantees' compliance of grant provisions and state policies, grant outcomes and considerations for fraud, abuse, and waste. Effective April 2024, the state revised its policy to require agencies to complete these evaluations within 60 days of completing all our grant requirements. We tested 70 grant agreements, and we found that BHA did not complete 26 evaluations until after we requested documentation, and some of that documentation was backdated in the system. These grants were not subject to 60-day requirement. We also found that BHA did not complete another 28 evaluations within 60-day period. The 10 that were passed that were at least 200 days after the final payment, and some of these were also not completed until we requested the documentation. And for another 4 grant agreements, BHA did not have any documentation. In 2024, the legislature appropriated approximately $1.8 million for payments, not grants, to two organizations to provide specific mental health-related services. On this slide, we show an example of appropriation language for $1.5 million payment to one organization. As these payments were not specifically called grants in the appropriation laws, DHS did not treat them as such, and these payments were not subject to oversight policies developed by the Office of the Grant Management. DHS is not required to monitor how this organization spent appropriated funds. In our report, we recommended that the legislature should decide whether it wants entities that receive payments to be considered grantees and subject to Office of the Grant Management policy, or if not, the legislature should identify the type of oversight it expects from BHA. Given the issues that we identified, the BHA grants, we decided to take a deeper look at the culture within BHA and assess whether grant managers felt that they received adequate training to perform their job duties. We issued a survey to all 196 BHA employees and received 86% response rate. While most survey respondents did not indicate ethical or legal concerns, staff noted concerns about other aspects of BHA leadership. Approximately one-third of the respondents disagreed that BHA leadership values employees' input or shares relevant information in a timely manner. And one staff member shared that the executive leadership has repeatedly shown staff that they won't take the staff's concerns or questions seriously until something serious happens or it makes the news. Many employees who indicated that they managed grants stated that they did not receive sufficient training. Approximately 73% disagreed that they received sufficient training prior to managing grants at BHA, and 40% disagreed that they received sufficient training in these areas while managing grants at BHA. We also asked employees if they conducted financial reconciliations. For those who positively responded, we asked if they understood how to appropriately conduct those financial reconciliations. Less than 20% of 37 employees who indicated they performed financial reconciliations responded that they completely understood how to appropriately conduct the financial reconciliation of grantee expenses. Our report contained numerous recommendations for BHA and DHS, and in general, we recommended that BHA and DHS to establish sufficient internal controls to ensure compliance of grant requirements, to conduct grant monitoring activities as required by state policies, to train employees on how to perform grant management work, and to ensure that supervisors oversee work of assigned grant managers. We also recommended BHA to remedy issues we identified in our financial reconciliations. This concludes my presentation, and we will be happy to answer your questions later.
Ms. Stone, Ms. Lyson, thank you for your presentation this morning. We have plenty to unpack there. But before we do, we'll hear from the Department of Human Services. If they could please make their way up. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. It may take you a moment yet to get set up, but as you get settled in, please feel free to introduce yourself for the record, and whenever you're ready, you can start your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Schumacher, Co-Chair Knorr, and committee members. Thank you for having me with you here today. And I want to thank Legislative Auditor Randall and her team for the important work that she's done and has done multiple times to review the administration's or the department's grant process. I appreciate the value they bring, and it is helping DHS to strengthen its internal controls. Strong internal controls and processes for behavioral health grants are critical to protect the taxpayer dollars, to ensure effective use of funds, to promote the positive behavioral outcomes the state is seeking to achieve, and to empower people and families to engage in treatment and recovery. These funds are significant as communities statewide experience rising mental health challenges and the nation continues to face an ongoing opioid epidemic. With respect to the audit report, while I'm disappointed DHS has continued to have findings, the OLA's report highlights the importance of the grant compliance work that has been underway at the department, and DHS agrees with and is working to resolve all findings. One challenge at DHS is that the administrative budget, which at DHS that includes both staff and technology, consistently remains between 2 and 3%, which is challenging in terms of supporting strong internal controls with staffing and IT systems. And just looking at grant dollars over this time period, they have increased 80% from 2020 to 2025. The audit report covers July 1st, 2022 through December 31st, 2024. And this current audit that we're talking about today overlaps by 12 months with the earlier OLA report on state-funded grants from July 1st, 2022 through June 30, 2023. So due to this overlap on audits, many of DHS's improvements and changes were in development or in the early phases of implementation during this audit period. Where we stand today is that DHS has resolved some audit findings with the remainder to be completed this year. And BHA compliance and DHS internal audits will be testing the fixes that DHS puts in place to see whether the internal controls are working as intended or further work is needed on the internal controls. When I reviewed the report, I saw two overarching themes that were evident that require DHS's continued systematic attention. First, there's a clear need for increased oversight and supervision of grant managers to ensure they complete required functions on time and in compliance with all requirements. The supervisory review serves as an essential control to verify that grant agreements include the required elements, that amendments are timely, that payments are made only after proper authorization, progress reports are reviewed before payments are issued, monitoring visits are completed and properly documented, and grant closeout reports are completed within the required timeframes. Second, there's a need for adequate comprehensive training for grant managers on grant management requirements, policies, procedures, both before they begin managing grants and as requirements evolve. Insufficient training can lead to gaps in understanding of the requirements, such as statutory citations, competitive bidding, payment restrictions, progress reporting standards, and monitoring obligations. Over the past several years, DHS has been making durable structural reforms to the department as a foundation to support these grant-making needs. These changes were taking place during the audit. In August of 2024, the Behavioral Health Division was elevated to an administration, and an assistant commissioner came on board in September of 2024, bringing executive level focus and accountability to this grant heavy administration. BHA has also added dedicated compliance and contract manager to oversee grant administration, along with two quality assurance staff. And also, going back a year from that, in 2023, the legislature funded the creation of a central grants office at DHS to provide oversight and continuous improvement to grant processes. Before that, DHS had no team that was able to support grant makers across the agency in their requirements. The Central Grants Office manages the contracts integration system to support grants through their life cycle from pre-award through closeout, and providing enhanced oversight and accountability. The Central Grants Office also provides technical assistance, guidance, training, and tools to the administration in grant making. So, as I mentioned, DHS has been working on strengthening its grants management practices and has resolved a number of grant audit findings. In terms of request for proposals, the auditors found no significant issues with the RFP process in their testing of 14 out of 36 requests for proposals. Conflicts of interest for RFP reviewers have been addressed by implementing a pre-workflow checklist and establishing internal controls requiring the contract specialist to review all pre-award documentation before initiating any contract work. Our RFPs have the required language that is that was resolved by updating templates with our contracts and legal compliance division, and then BHA making sure that the templates are used, and then a double check of that before contracts go out by the contracts division. In terms of RFP scoring, that's another area that has been resolved, but we continue to provide targeted training, because as staff turns over, we need to ensure that new staff are trained and know how to use the tools properly. And then in terms of advance payments to grantees, there is a pre-workflow checklist that has been developed, a standardized request for contract advance for BHA grantees, and again, comprehensive training on these aspects. In terms of the status on addressing open findings, I just want to say again that DHS agrees with all of the findings, and in the back of the OLA report is DHS's 16-page response letter. We have provided the actions we are taking for each of these findings. The people responsible for seeing those actions through to completion and our estimated target date for completion. We estimate that we will be completed on addressing all of these by the end of the year, with many of them being addressed by mid-year this year. DHS does track all audit findings until completion, and as I stated earlier, we will be doing internal testing both within the Behavioral Health Administration and DHS's audit team to see if the internal controls we established are effective. For many of the findings, what is needed is a multi-pronged approach to resolve them. And the multi-pronged approach, as you look at the response letter in the BHA report, often includes items such as policies, procedures, templates, and forms being added or improved, new training modules to support grant managers, BHA compliance manager and quality assurance staff monitoring the work for completion and accuracy, some of the specific actions requiring leadership sign-off, and where possible, We are creating new monitoring capabilities in the contracts integration system so that the people monitoring grants can run reports and help them keep on top of the status of the completion of work. Much of the work underway also includes streamlining grant management processes and reducing the potential for conflicts of interest, fraud, waste, and abuse in the grant-making process through the development of standardized processes and clear roles and responsibilities. Streamlining is important because, as the OLA pointed out, the number of grants running through the Department of Human Services, and in particular the Behavioral Health Administration, has increased exponentially over the years. We are continuing to increase oversight and supervision so that we are complying with all of the OGM and DHS requirements, stronger internal controls to ensure progress reports are received and reviewed before payments are issued, adding internal controls to ensure invoices are validated and authorized before we disperse payments, and strengthening oversight, as I mentioned, to make sure that these items are happening. Now, in addition to, this is not covered in the OLA report, but in addition to the work going on at BHA, we have an agency-wide grant standardization process underway so that we are taking learnings from this and applying it across the agency. And in particular, we are doing this with a continuous improvement mindset. And we are working to achieve standardization of policies across the agency, clear expectations from leadership and around the monitoring and controls, additional safeguards such as separating some of the duties in grants management, and aligning grant staff to statewide standards and having clear roles and responsibilities in the position descriptions that we can hold people accountable to. In my audit response letter, I also noted that DHS had made grant training mandatory for those involved in the grant process, and I'm happy to report today that the BHA staff has 100% completion in all DHS and statewide mandatory grant training, and overall DHS has a 99.7 completion rate, and we will get to that 100%. I continue to ask for updates on that. Also, in the Legislative Audit Commission hearing, it was requested of the agency that we make our grants public on our website, and I committed to that agency that I would do so. Where we are in that process right now is that we have a list of all of the grant agreements on our website publicly, and our team is working to put the grant agreements on the website as well, and that should be completed in the next couple months. And lastly, I want to provide you with a status update of the documentation issue that the OLA brought to DHS's attention on December 18th, which was the day of our exit conference, and that staff shared with you today. I want to say that I was shocked to hear that information during our exit conference, that some staff had backdated documents, and that there was suspicion that documents were also falsified. It is absolutely unacceptable to me that anybody would provide information that is anything other than an accurate representation of our work done to the legislative auditor. That evening, I spoke with Legislative Auditor Randall and her staff, along with my chief compliance officer, to get more information about what they had found. The following day, the legislative auditor's team provided us with the documentation that they had gathered, and DHS began a full audit, or a full investigation, rather, of the matter. And I just want to detail for you where we are. So following that, we secured the investigative resources and developed an investigative plan There's two phases to the investigation plan. One, we were first prioritized investigating the staff that were identified as having falsified documents. And then the second phase was to look at staff who were not, who submitted documentation late to the CIS, and we were working to determine whether that documentation was accurate of what was completed at the time, but just wasn't stored in the right place, or whether there was problems with that documentation as well. So what our investigation team did was to immediately, actually right after we received the information from the legislative auditor, was to capture all the digital evidence in DHS's system so that we could conduct an investigation with and not have anybody sort of altering any information in DHS's system. So we collected that. The investigatory team familiarized themselves with all of the grants requirements and processes. They're reviewing the database and metadata, emails, home drives, all of that, and then in January conducted investigations with the initial employees that were part of phase one, and just recently delivered that to HR, and HR discussed that with leadership, and leadership is taking action appropriate with the investigation's findings. Phase two is our investigation continues along with that broader group of employees, as well as following up on information that came out of the first round of investigations. So thank you for having me here with you today to discuss the findings and recommendations and the important work that has been ongoing and continues at the department to improve our grant management processes.
And thank you, Commissioner, for your response to the presentation there. We didn't get at the beginning your identification. I believe this is the first time you've been in front of this committee with your new title. So if you could please introduce yourself for the record.
Wow, I missed that. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Shireen Gandhi, honored to serve as Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Human Services.
Very good, and thank you, and congratulations for that. I have a couple questions to start, and members, the commissioner has until 9:15 this morning, so we'll start with questions for her on this. In your introduction, you mentioned that 2 to 3% of the budget is for administrative costs. Was that for the department as a whole or for grants?
That's for the department as a whole. So that is overall DHS's funding for people and IT systems.
Okay, thank you. And it's my understanding that typically with grants, we usually have like a 10% administrative fee that the department can hold. I'm not sure if that's true with the grants that were issued here.
Thank you for the question, Chair Schumacher. That would be nice if we had that ability, but the way that grants are appropriated to DHS, it is written in usually that we are not allowed to take any money off for administration. So it is just the 2 to 3%.
Okay, thank you for that. My next question was, from where we sit, are there ways that we should be writing grants that make it easier or more effective for you to be able to do your work so that we don't have reports like this coming forward? Are there things you're seeing in that?
That's a good question. I think an important piece is adequate funding. So with thousands of grants, if staff are supposed to do site visits for every single grant, which is absolutely something that would strengthen our oversight and confidence that the money is being spent as intended, that is resource intensive. So I think that that is important. I think the investment that the legislature made in 2023, I can't thank you all enough for supporting the creation of the Central Grants Office at DHS. We have a team of people who have been able to create the tools and templates for financial reconciliations, the on-demand trainings for all the steps of the grant process. We are not done because that funding was just appropriated in 23, and we've had to build the team and have prioritized the work, but we have a good, strong start on a foundation of training.
Okay, and the final piece, and it wasn't mentioned in either presentation today, but there was an issue with some of this with technology talking to each other. With that, why isn't that happening, and what's being worked on in that area as well?
Yes, I forget which finding that was exactly, but the issue is that we have two systems, SWIFT and the Enterprise Grant Management System, that were not communicating correctly, and our finance team is taking the lead on that audit finding and resolving it so that we don't have that situation of unintended overpayments again.
Okay. Thank you very much. First, with questions, Representative Gander.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for your testimony. You know, it seems as though there's kind of a culture of sloppiness inside the organization. And it seems as though, you know, they miss some data, they miss a deadline, and they just kind of go back and fudge that. So can you imagine if you came to have your eyes examined and your optometrist forgot to record your eyeglass prescription, then a month later just tried to fill that in best they could remember? How likely are you to get good eyesight from those glasses filled in a month after your eye exam, best I can remember? So I know you're going through a process, and it's a very sterile, very step-by-step process, which is important. How are you going to carry the angst that we have back to your department for these fundamental changes to make this sort of activity unthinkable? How will you carry that angst back to them where this sort of thing, just the culture of the organization goes through a seismic shift, so this sort of thing just is unthinkable?
Mr. Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative Gander, thank you for that question. Culture change is incredibly important, and it starts at the top. And it starts with the leaders of the administrations, and it needs to be supported by everything we do at DHS. Our Office of Employee Culture has trustworthiness as one of the standards of culture. They are working to build that in across the agency. Our Behavioral Health Administration is working on training for all its managers and team to improve the culture. Absolutely. Doing the work correctly with integrity is the expectation, and if people are not living up to that expectation, then we need to hold them accountable through the performance management process.
Representative Gander.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Dawn and I were both here. I heard her say a little something, and you came to the conclusion of all of the study that had taken place, and both of us were thinking, and then what? Right, so we're at this point along the way, and now what? So I would ask then that we would have some periodic reports as we see incremental changes and steps that you take to bring that culture back to where these things really are unthinkable. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gander, Representative Gordon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hicks, what word did you use the other day? Rage or shame?
Rage.
Rage, thank you. I'm very thankful for the work that the OLA has done here. They've done excellent work exposing these issues. And if we're serious about fixing fraud, we need a robust, mean, and independent Inspector General's office, not some wimpy version that's been put forward by the Democrats. So the department, shame on you. DHS should be enraged, but I don't see it. And Representative Franson, I'm with you. I don't believe a word that comes out of the commissioner's mouth.
Commissioner, would you like to respond, or should we move to the next?
Sure.
Okay. Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher, and Representative Gordon, I don't expect you to believe anything I say. We are working, we are putting in the work at DHS. We are documenting the work at DHS, and I'm happy to meet with you at any time to show you the progress we're making. I am serious about what I am doing, and the people at DHS that I'm working with are serious, and again, I don't expect you to believe me, but I'm happy to meet with you and show you the changes we're making.
Thank you, Commissioner Gandhi. Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher. And I'm not sure if this question is for the commissioner or if it would be for Director Bailey or not. So when you say that the behavioral health grants have increased exponentially over the years, what does that look like in dollars and cents?
Commissioner Gandhi.
Yes. I believe it is, you can see that in the report, and the OLA just presented on it, but we have, going up from 190, going up over, from over 100 million to 300 million. I don't have the chart with me today, but the number of grants, I'm going from memory, but went from a couple hundred in about 2018 through the pandemic up to close to 1,000 grants a year. So the volume of the grant agreements themselves, as well as the funding, greatly accelerated while the staffing remained marginal, did not go up proportionally.
Representative Gilman.
All right, so thank you for that. I'm just going to read a little text that I got last night from a constituent. I know it is illegal to not pay taxes. However, is there some type of law or something in our Constitution that says if government steals from its own people or doesn't handle the money appropriately, we can withhold our money? I mean, this has to stop. The amount that we pay keeps getting stolen. I should have the right to withhold payment. No one is getting punished or held accountable. Corrupt politicians are just going to keep taking our money. And what can we do when we can't do anything about it? You must have some ideas, something that's going to change. And when I listen to you, Commissioner, talk about culture change, this takes me into my next thing. You talked about in phase one, excuse my voice, in phase one, the investigations that are happening, you mentioned the word home drives. Also, home drives are being investigated. So what percentage or how many DHS employees are still working from home and not in the office? Culture happens when we're together. How many employees are still at home?
Commissioner Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative Gilman, thank you for that question. Home drives refers to a drive on the computer.
Okay.
That is stored on the computer itself.
Okay.
And in response to your question about staff working at home, I know that we are following the mandate that staff need to be in the office at least 50% of the time.
Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you, Chair. So let's go back to that 50% of the time. You as commissioner could or could not, as part of your culture change and having accountability and having people working together, could you ask all of your employees to come in, whether there's a mandate or not, to come into the office physically?
Commissioner Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative Gilman. At DHS, the 50% mandate also includes the ability to have staff come in based on business need, meetings, et cetera. So I believe that that's the way the language is written, and labor contracts support business being able to make those decisions.
Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Chair. So, Commissioner, I would encourage you, as part of your culture change, what's interesting is when we work together, we see each other face to face. We're sharing ideas. And people are back in the office working side by side. I would encourage you to increase people having accountability and being in the office working together. I'll stop with that. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Gilman. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Gandhi, you got promoted in spite of all the fraud that's taking place within your department. And why should the taxpayers trust that you're going to stop the fraud and the waste and abuse when all this happened as you were acting as a, you know, acting commissioner at the time?
Commissioner Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative Franson, can you clarify so this report was from 2022 to 2024. Your question is?
The current fraud that's happening. Sorry,
Commissioner Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative Franson, in the time since I stepped into the temporary commissioner role, DHS has taken serious and intense actions to both root out fraud and put many program integrity measures into place to prevent fraud in the first place. This has been, it is a significant issue to address and to turn around. The Medicaid system has been built over decades. And to strengthen it, we actually need to start with proper program design at the beginning. We need to strengthen internal controls at DHS. And then we need to make sure that we are measuring outcomes as well as post-payment review. DHS has had a long-standing OIG in place that has been investigating and tackling fraud. When I stepped into the role, what I began to learn is that there was a need to move from our reactive tip-based system to investigate what fraud, to uncover whether there was more fraud happening than we were aware of through our tip-based system. I did that. We used data analytics to uncover it. I ultimately designated 14 services as high risk so that we could have enhanced internal controls to address and go after that fraud. We initiated enhanced prepayment review to look for fraud in new ways before we pay a claim. We're revalidating 5,800 providers in high-risk programs. I could go on and on with other actions, but that has been my top priority for the whole year that I have been in this role.
Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, with what you have said, how many people have been let go, fired for the malfeasance that has taken place within DHS? The grant recipient, or the BHA grant manager that approved the payment of $672,647 for a single month of work and then left the department to work as a consultant for the very same grantee. Why were internal controls not telling you, hey, stop this massive payment, and why was the individual allowed to transition into a paid role with the grantee they were supposedly overseeing?
Commissioner Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative Franson, thank you for that question, and I believe that you're talking about the matter that is on page 25 of the report. All of that is extremely upsetting, and what I will say is that when this matter first came to the attention of the compliance office and me as deputy commissioner, it was toward the end of 2024. We immediately initiated an internal audit investigation into the matter. Obviously, we have no control of where somebody goes to work, and we didn't learn about this until after the fact. As I said, we learned about it in 2024. The internal audit led us to cancel the contract with the grantee. What we found out about the individuals and the situation had us refer the matter to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, And once we finished our audit, we also referred the matter to the Attorney General's office for recoupment of funds.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Commissioner, you have about 5 minutes left here before you have to be on your way. We do have Representative Franson, if she has a follow-up. Then we have Representative Jacob, Murphy, Knutson, Knorr, and then I want to allow you a moment for a follow-up or a final statement. So Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher. So in my years on the Legislative Audit Commission, just unbelievable to hear any one of these pieces come out and report, backdating documents, overpayments, unsupported costs, reporting gaps, circumventing bidding processes. If that happened on any one of those items happens on a report, that would be just a scandalous report. So to see all this come out of one report is unbelievable, and thank you to the OLA office for the good work that's been done here. But you've had the benefit now of about 60 days since this report was released. So I'm going to ask you a couple of the same questions that I asked you back in January when this was released. First of all, what's being done with respect to recovery of the lost funds? What percent of funds do you expect to recover? And what's your plan for restitution to the taxpayer?
Commissioner Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative, thank you for the question. For any funds that were such as the ones on page 25, where we are not able to substantiate that they were spent appropriately, we conduct investigations and follow the process that I outlined for that matter. The other items, if the services were delivered, then there is not a mechanism for, there wouldn't be a reason to recoup them.
Representative Jacob.
Well, that's not a satisfactory answer. What percentage of the funds do you expect to recover? And how many, what number, what percent has been recovered?
Commissioner Gandhi.
Not just the ones that are
Representative
not
Jacob. Commissioner Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative, maybe I'm not understanding your question. Which funds?
Representative Jacob.
You could pick out any part of the report, any funds that you're aware of that have been lost. What has been done and to recover that?
Commissioner Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative, again, I need to know, the funds that were paid out where there's not substantiating information that the services were delivered are under active recovery. I don't have an estimate of what we expect to recover. We are trying to recover the full amount.
Representative Jacob.
Okay, I'll leave that at that. The other question I had asked back at that time, and you've used the word internal controls many times, and I think the concern has been kind of a fox guarding the hen house, so to speak. What has been done to bring in outside overlooking onto this? What is it, still just entirely internal controls, or are you bringing in any outside of the agency to work on this issue, be accountable to?
Commissioner Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative, internal controls is a term of art that is about the mechanisms that you have in place to make sure that operations are happening as intended. We have an internal audits division, which is independent from the administration's, who is another level of a defense to double check that the internal controls are working as intended. And then we also have the legislative auditor who has been auditing. At this point, this area has been audited quite frequently and with overlapping audit time periods. So I don't believe it would be helpful to throw another external entity into the mix to audit it, but that is something certainly that the department could do on top of the internal controls testing I discussed. Once the implementation changes are in process so that we then test if they're working. It's not very helpful to test them as you're trying to build them.
Representative Jacob?
Last question. So what I heard you say is you would not be supportive of any external controls or Office of Inspector General or any outside agency?
Chair Schumacher, Representative, that is not what I said. I'm not talking about an outside Office of Inspector General. If there was another entity that that you thought was needed in addition to the OLA to audit, I would be supportive of that. I think a fresh set of eyes that's not connected to the work is always helpful to illuminate our blind spots and to help us make our work stronger.
Representative Vernig.
Thank you. Kim has mentioned RAGE, Representative Hicks has mentioned RAGE, and Representative Gordon, and this is my RAGE, and I apologize. I have a bazillion questions that hopefully we could address offline, but I would like to ask the first question, and then I have a follow-up comment, but I believe Chair Schumacher, you asked about a percentage for the grants, but I think there's another way that you could address that with assigning FTEs to an agency for grant administration as opposed to a percentage of that. Is that, say, for example, the school-linked behavioral health grants, do you get funding for an FTE or more to manage that, not necessarily as a percentage of those funds?
Commissioner Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative Vernig, I don't know the details of each grant, but yes, like I think it is very important, as Tim O'Malley, Program Integrity Director, mentioned in his report, and that we have testified that depending on the grant and the requirements, that we have the appropriate staffing to follow through on all of the very important Office of Grants Management requirements.
Representative Vernig.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm just going to rattle these off because I'm a little frustrated, but there are four providers who were listed in this audit who I believe provide services through the school-linked behavioral health grants, which total about $28 million over 2.5 years. And that intersection of healthcare and education is really important to me. And so I see that they're still listed as providers, and I understand that the services may be provided, but the administration is where the problem lies. And I think it's really important that you as an agency, when you talk about culture and things like that, are working on it, because that's $28 million that could have gone to schools to hire providers as well. And you talked about training provided. I'm really concerned about that. I feel like I have managed a $6 million statewide grant. Progress reports, on-site visits, payroll runs are standard. So the fact that we're now here at this point saying training, that it really concerns me. And then how many grant managers do you have? Is it, it doesn't sound like there's a centralized system of grants management. There's behavioral health section, grant managers all over. Is that their full-time job? Is it part of their job? How does the Office of Grant Management oversee this? Are they just, occasionally popping in, or do you have a deep relationship? Where are these needs addressed in your plan? Are you requesting staffing to help with grant administration? Are you looking at the recommendations from the OLA as part of your plan? As you said, this has expanded exponentially over the years. Why is it maybe not more centralized? And then just kind of going to, it doesn't seem like there's a statewide grant administration system. So in education, I've asked this as well. We have people who are getting grants from the ed finance area, from, you know, DHS, MDH, MDE, and it's hard to tell. I saw on page 25 you ended a second grant with one of the grantees who was identified. It would be really nice if there was a statewide system to see, oh, not only are they getting grants here, but they're getting grants over there, and maybe we need to look at what's happening in both spaces. So that's just my, this is me raging out, not as you know.
That's okay.
Yes, yeah, forcefully as thank you, forcefully as Representative Hicks, but I would really like to have a conversation about my concerns outside of here.
Thank you, Representative Vernick. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to know about just the legal and unethical activity by your staff. Can you tell me what percent of your staff was said that they thought that there was unethical or illegal activity?
Commissioner Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative, are you referring to the statistics from the OLA survey?
There's 11% of your staff alleged that they were asked by leadership to perform acts that were believed to be contrary to the state, and another 13% were asked if there was unethical activity. Is that true?
Commissioner Gandhi.
I believe it to be true if that's what the OLA reported.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that's over 781 people that thought there was illegal activity, and over 900 people that thought there was unethical activity. My question for you is, how many people were fired because of those two activities?
Commissioner Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative, I don't believe those numbers are correct. The Behavioral Health Administration is not that large, and it's my understanding that the OLA surveyed the Behavioral Health Administration. But regardless of the numbers, the percent is as the OLA reported, and if I am aware, if any of our leadership is aware of somebody that is doing something that is illegal, unethical, we will investigate it and take action. That includes termination and other levels of discipline, so that sort of behavior is not acceptable to me.
Representative Murphy.
I would just like a follow-up information on the number of people that have been fired because of an ethical or illegal activity that was brought up during their report that they gave back to DHS. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Representative Knudsen.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner Gandhi, prior to last February, when you were promoted to temporary interim commissioner, what was your role at DHS? What was your title?
Commissioner Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative, Deputy Commissioner.
And prior to that?
Senator Knudsen, Representative.
Thank you, Chair.
Commissioner Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative, it was Assistant Commissioner, and before that, Chief Compliance Officer.
Correct.
Representative Knudsen.
Thank you, Chair. Chief Compliance Officer. For the years that this report was done, you were Chief Compliance Officer. This fraud happened when you were Chief Compliance Officer. And then you were promoted. And now you've been promoted again. How do the people, how do the taxpayers, how do you expect the taxpayers of Minnesota to trust your leadership now? When you couldn't get a handle on this as Chief Compliance Officer, how, it's ridiculous that anybody in this state would think that now, under a new title, you're gonna start to be tough on fraud. I am appalled. We are talking about billions of dollars throughout all these programs. Billions of dollars that could have helped actual Minnesotans. And now we're supposed to just all of a sudden forget? Chief Compliance Officer, This fraud has run rampant. And you've been there the whole time.
Commissioner Gandhi.
Chair Schumacher, Representative. As I mentioned before, we have an Inspector General, and the whole time I have been at DHS, the Inspector General has been working to find and stop fraud at DHS. As Chief Compliance Officer, I was working on setting up the systems and controls that would help our department operate better. We have come a long way in improving grant making and the controls and supports to help our people do grant making. And if there are individuals who commit fraud, most of that is, all of that has been external. Internally, if there, I have not run across corruption, and when there has been wrongdoing, as came out in this report, I have taken swift action to address it.
Representative Knutson.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be quick. You failed at your job as Chief Compliance Officer, and then you were promoted. And now you say that you're taking swift action, but nothing has been done. Nobody has been fired. We have a report in front of us that somebody gave $600,000 and then turned around and quit and went to work for the program that was given $600,000. We need a serious change of culture in this state. This has gone on far too long, and you have been there for the majority of it. Nobody in this state has faith that anything is going to change because of this, because failed bureaucrats are being promoted. We need major reform in this state.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to say thank you, Commissioner, and for all the efforts that you are undertaking to put us in the right direction. I know I wanted to also thank OLA for pointing out those issues. This is, as you noted, Commissioner, this is outrageous for somebody to do some of the actions that my colleagues have talked about. But also we should be outrageous that we as legislators have also failed. Going through the legislative process, reading the notwithstanding 16B.98 that should have given you the resources to manage those grants in an efficient way, making sure that you can get the 5% for non-competitive and 10% for competitive. It's written into the law, notwithstanding 16B.98, when some of these grants went out. We've got a cultural change that we have to make. The shift starts with us. Awesome. The change that we want to see must come from us. But also we need to make sure that there are guardrails and support, a portal system where we can see where the resources are going, in a system that we can invest. We can't fix a ship by just saying, just go and fix all those issues. This is a major issue, not only for DHS, but for all state agencies. Now is the time to look at the OGM, Office of Grant Management. What are we doing to make sure that everyone who is in that system, you can see the progress, you can see the documents that are necessary. This is the time that we must invest in that system. So with that, I just wanted to say thank you, Commissioner, and to the OLA. We have got a lot of work left in a short period of time. And Mr. Chair, this is something that we need to be looking into. Every time that I see notwithstanding some of the sections, it creates more headache. It does not provide guidance, and then we will be blaming the agency for things that we've done ourselves. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Noor. And Commissioner Gandhi, you've already given us 15 more minutes than you graced us with that. If you want a final word, you're welcome to it.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher, Representative Noor, and Representative Knutson. I just want to say that you said nothing was done. People were referred to law enforcement, so something was done. I thank you, Chair Noor, for your thoughtful comments about the system under which we operate. and look forward to ongoing discussions and partnerships so that we can strengthen that and continue to improve. It is essential that we protect taxpayer dollars and that we get the outcomes that we are attempting to get from these grants for the people of Minnesota, and I stand ready to work with all of you on that.
Thank you, Commissioner, for your time today and for your responses. Now we can have the Office of Legislative Auditor come back up. Welcome back to the committee. I don't have anyone with questions at the moment, so maybe if you could start by just offering a response to what Chair Knorr had just said about the way that we write some legislation in regards to grants. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and provide us with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, Judy Randall, Legislative Auditor. I wanted to thank you all for taking the time this morning on this really important report, and I really appreciate the thoughtful discussion that's been happening. Representative Moore, I really appreciated your comments. I think that, I think there is blame to go around regarding the fraud, and there are several angles to it. One is the legislature has a responsibility. I don't focus so much on the funding. That's, you know, that's obviously how you guys want to do that. But I think in the laws you write, it's really important to put in controls up front. What do you want a grant program to achieve? And you need to give the agencies an ability to hold grantees accountable. I've seen more than I'd like to, frankly, lately, looking at laws that have been passed in the past couple of years that establish programs with very little guardrails. And so if agencies were inclined to hold folks accountable, and that's going to be my next piece, there's not much, the law doesn't give them much to hook onto. And so step one is let's create some of those guardrails in the law when you're establishing the program, right? What do you want it to achieve? How do you want it to get allocated? How do you want to hold folks accountable? And I think throughout all of this, it's always really important, and I know you all do, to think about the final recipient, the person, you know, in your town, on your street, whatever, who is the person who we want to get these services, right? That's ultimately who we're thinking about, not the provider, not the counties necessarily, but who should be getting these services. So the legislature. Secondly, absolutely, the agencies, right? They have responsibilities that are already in law. They're in law, they're in policy, they're in all of our expectations of what agency staff should be doing to oversee taxpayer money, period. And the expectations are not rocket science. I'm just going to say it. These are things that are basic. I talk about it of, you know, it's the basic maintenance you do on your house, right? It's just the things we would expect. When a reimbursement request comes in, you know, are you checking it against the purpose of the program? Do the numbers add up? I mean, this is simple stuff, right? And so agencies need to do that. Some agencies do it better than others. Part of that, I think, as we've discussed, or you all have discussed, is a culture shift, right? An understanding that compliance and oversight is an essential part to making sure the ultimate recipient is getting the services we intended. It's not an either or. It's not compliance or compassion, right? It's one and the same. And I think that there needs to be a tone shift. There needs to be an emphasis on this is important. There needs to be training. The fact that, you know, less than 20% of the folks who were conducting financial reconciliations didn't have a good understanding of how to do financial reconciliations, what's happening, right? So we have a misalignment in skills. We have a misalignment perhaps in what the focus should be. Okay, so there's legislative responsibility. There's absolutely agency responsibility. And then to kind of circle back to investment, I do think we have a real issue here in the state right now with our IT systems. I don't know that they need to be like wholesale scrapped and replaced, but we need to be thoughtful and have a thoughtful strategy about what we can do to help them talk to each other, because they're not, period. They're not across state agencies, and they're not within state agencies. They are not talking to each other. So, you know, all of the things that you and I and your constituents all think are no-brainers of like, well, why aren't they doing this? Why aren't they doing that? It is much harder than it should be, and then we all think it should be. One last thing, and then I will stop my soapbox, but thank you for the airtime, is related to the Office of Grants Management. You know, I think there is a big disconnect in terms of what that office does and maybe what folks either want them to do or think they do. They are not an enforcement entity at all. They establish policies, provide training. They're starting to become a little bit more centralized repository for information with grantees that have been identified as bad actors, but they are not enforcement. They do not go in and do oversight of agencies' grants. And right now in law, that is a discretionary authority for OGM. And they have chosen not to, and they have, what, 9 staff, maybe 10? And so if that is something that the legislature wants them to do, it should change it from a discretionary authority to a required authority, and then, you know, provide the resources that you want to have that happen. So I went off. I'm sorry. Thanks for the time. If you have questions, happy to answer. But these folks are the experts on the report. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Randall. One question I'm having as we talk about the administrative piece of it, and maybe it's not a fair question because, of course, it's different departments and what you know and all that. But when the assessment was done on the 11 for the reconciliation piece of it, how long does it take to do a reconciliation? Noting, too, that it may not be fair because this is what you all do versus what the department does, but the department probably understands the terminology a little bit better. Is it fair to compare how long it would take you to do a reconciliation to the department, and how long did it take?
Mr. Chair, that's a good question. And considering that we all on our team have financial background and accounting background, it's probably much easier and faster for us to do the financial reconciliation because we recognize the accrued expenses, we recognize the when expenses are allocated, and it's if the person does not have a financial background, basic financial background or accounting, it probably will take them much longer to even know what type of documentation to request. And as we pointed out in our finding, specifically, some of the grantees provided summary of their expenses in the form of Excel spreadsheets. When we reached out to them for specific source documents, some of them told us that they never provided underlying supporting individual invoices to DHS because nobody asked them. And essentially, that's the type of documentation DHS managers sometimes used to do the financial reconciliation. It is a time-consuming task to complete the financial reconciliation, but it also depends on the type of the grant and type of expense. If it's just a simple payment for an equipment piece, it might be much easier to do reconciliation versus performing the financial reconciliation of different types of expenses and allocated type of expense.
Thank you, Ms. Stone. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher, and thank you for Auditor Randall for being here to provide the information. One of the questions I have is, I know there needs to be a lot of work in making our systems better. The other part of the issue is in terms of recovering dollars. After they've gone out, they need to be reclaimed because of fraud. What is the practices that we should be looking at in terms of like requiring security bonds, those type of things that can be used? How extensive is that required in grants? And the reason I ask is, having been a CFO in my previous lifetime, I retired, having to have those for a number of grants where I would always put in, I don't remember which ones that we had them for state. I know the feds and the counties were always asking, is that a requirement? How helpful is it to have that for making it easier to reclaim money?
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Fisher. I appreciate the question. And I think you make a good point, right? There's the preventive upfront part, which I would argue needs a lot more attention, right? And then there's the recovery. So I call that pay and chase. It's a lot less effective. You know, if you require surety bonds, then if you identify that, you know, improper spending has happened, then at least there is a way to, in theory, recover some of those funds. I'll admit I'm not super familiar with all the processes related to surety bonds. It sounds like you know more than me, and I'm happy to learn more about it. But I would also say I don't know what the burden is on the provider to get one, and I think that's maybe the question that the legislature is going to need to struggle with in terms of finding that balance.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Auditor Randall. And it's one I think we need to look at. Having seen some nonprofits that when they've detected fraud, they've been able to go back, they get the dollars recovered, and then what's nice is they get dollars early in the process, so the state or the government unit gets made whole. And in the process, and they turn around, they continue the criminal investigations, and eventually things are taken care of in the criminal investigation. But in the meantime, the important part of when it occurs, you've got the dollars coming back much quicker and being made whole in the process. So that's one of the things I think is a possibility for us to look at, particularly with entities that are newer and ongoing. There is a cost there, but I think it's also something if we're requiring it, we could make it as a reimbursable expense. And I think when you do that, it makes it easier for smaller agencies. They can name the state with the surety bond. It helps address the problems in that regard, and also starts getting the agency itself thinking more, what are we doing to make sure we've got the right things in place as a preventive type things, or thinking these are the other things. And with newer agencies or very small agencies, they're not always in that mindset. Having to go through these extra processes may take a little bit longer before they get their grants executed, but it gives that extra protection and confidence that if something goes wrong, there's extra ways for the taxpayer dollars to be protected.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Representative Backer.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, first of all, I would agree. I'm going to agree with your statements, and I'm not here to put you in a difficult position. You stated that we need to put guardrails on, but you also said that this is some basic maintenance to the house. And I would love our two DHS people to share that back to the commissioner. Is this a simple stuff? Is the right people getting what it is? And so your statement to me is spot on, because they're running the largest department. And as we heard from Representative Knutson, our current commissioner was the compliance officer. So I do agree with that statement. Now, here's my couple questions here. Has any of you, doesn't have to just be with Auditor Randall, has DHS implemented any prior recommendations, not from this report, but other reports at all? Go ahead, please.
Ms. Lyson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. They have, the Financial Audit Division, as well as the two other divisions within our office, do follow up with prior audit recommendations. So we have gone back, we have looked, that some things have been rectified, but obviously with this audit, we will give them a couple of years before we go back and see that, but some progress has been made on some of those recommendations.
Okay. Representative Backer.
Thank you. No, it was, I think I heard this, please correct me if I'm wrong. There does seem to be some of the stuff, the verification, you talked about invoices, other possibly documents. So my question is how many grant receivers had, what percentage would you believe from your research, your audit, that grant receivers had to submit verification performance data that they actually did ABC? How many of those grant receivers actually submitted performance data to say, yep, you know what, I actually came and I did change the roof on the house. I did put new shingles on. I actually painted it. I did the maintenance I was supposed to do.
Ms. Lyson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It is on page 22 of the report. We tested 51 grant agreements, and we found issues with 29 of those progress reports. So I am not, even though I am an accountant, I cannot do that percentage in my head right now of the part that had successful or completed progress reports. Now, again, I'm just going to say that a progress report coming in is a self-attestation from that grantee. It is not confirmation that that progress is being made, so I want to clarify that. But we did have significant issues with a majority of those progress reports that we saw.
Representative Becker.
So, thank you. So here's my summary. None of us would want our current commissioner being a pilot of the airplane. That means over 50% of the time, that airplane would crash. Because at 29, that's over 50%, you know, 25 is 50. So that is horrible. And when you're the pilot, you are responsible for the ship. Doesn't matter if it's a compliance. When you're the compliance, you're the head pilot. And yes, we have responsibility. I get it, Chair Knorr. But at the end of the day, when someone says they're going to do a roof, you better go check that the roof is done. That is alarming when we have 29 of the 51, which is roughly about 54%. People did not have to support any data. And I really appreciate you guys digging in and giving us this information. Thank you. No further questions.
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher. Auditor Randall, I appreciate you being here with us. I've got a couple of questions about, you know, as you look at this report and the other audits and reports that you've done, about, you know, some ideas that might help ensure compliance within the executive branch. So the first is, you know, as you look at this report and others, would it be helpful to have an entity within the executive branch that is tasked with establishing standards and best practices concerning the operation, investigations, and fraud prevention processes for the agencies that they would be required to follow, and then they would periodically be reviewed against those best practices and standards? Do you think that that would be something that would be helpful?
Auditor Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Norris. I will say that there's a department within MMB, so the Internal Controls Compliance Accountability Unit, it's not right, but that does that. They establish the policies that all agencies are supposed to follow. They provide training. They don't necessarily go in and periodically test whether that's happening. I would say the agencies have internal audits, auditors embedded, at least the larger ones that do that. So I think it's a useful function. I think it already exists to some extent within MMB.
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher. But it sounds like that, you know, especially the review portion, and it sounds like, too, you mentioned the Office of Grants Management. Again, setting some protocols and processes, but not necessarily going in and reviewing. How about, you know, some of these agencies like DHS have their own inspectors general within their agencies, but do you think it would be helpful to have an entity that if that office of inspector general within an agency is getting overwhelmed with the number of investigations they're having to do, or there's a need for more specialized expertise, to have an entity that could come in and assist and support the work of those agency inspectors general?
Auditor Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Norris. And I do know what you're doing, so we all know what's happening here. just wanted to acknowledge. An agency like DHS has an incredibly large number of programs and very complex systems. And I think an inspector general that is embedded in that agency, honestly, is the one best positioned to conduct those investigations. They can work with the program folks. They can dig in deep. And I haven't seen evidence of an independence issue before. We haven't dug in deep on those. There are a number of agencies that don't have an inspector general, and I would say there are a number of agencies that don't have them that should have them. So in terms of having program-specific knowledge, I think that's better embedded. I mean, when the whole Inspector General conversation started up, people came to me and said, hey, you know, and I said, I wouldn't want that responsibility and I wouldn't want that job. There are 2,500 plus subsystems in the state, and to really be a good Inspector General, you would need to be an expert in a lot of those. It seems like an impossible task, just being really candid here. That being said, I think there is a role for some information sharing, for sure. That is something that the state needs, and frankly, OLA has been doing a lot behind the scenes to help agencies share information when they report to us. We dig into our data systems and see if we can identify other agencies that are working with those folks and trying to be kind of the hub and spoke, but I don't think that's really OLA's role. So I think there is a role for that, and I think, sure, there's a role for backup help because everybody's overwhelmed, right? So I think I walked the line down the middle, but I'm happy to talk more offline, of course.
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher, and thank you for that comprehensive response, Auditor Randall. You also mentioned that, yeah, some of these agencies do have inspectors general, others do not. How about, especially for those that don't, but even for ones like DHS that do, the prepayment review procedures and making sure that those are robust and standardized across the state agencies. Is there a need for that sort of work?
Auditor Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Norris. Right now it's a very blunt tool that the agency is using. And I think we're in an unusual time where some kind of bold action needed to happen. I don't think that prepayment review on every single transaction for every single provider is a feasible way forward forever. I mean, we could do it, but as a state, it would be expensive, right? And so I think one of the things that agencies need to get better at across the board is having a risk management strategy, frankly, and prioritizing, right? So we have 100 providers, just making this up, right? Not all 100 need every claim to be reviewed every single time. Not all 100 need to be visited every month to make sure they're providing the services. There are ways to use data and information to identify where that additional oversight needs to be targeted. And what we haven't seen is agencies being thoughtful about that, right? Like using the information they do have to say, okay, we're going to take a scalpel approach and, we're going to look at everybody periodically, but we're really going to focus on the top 20% that, for reasons that are grounded in information have caused us concern. So, of course, I went off and lost the thread, but in terms of prepayment review being, standard across everything, it's an expensive approach. It would provide more assurance that everything's right, but it's a very expensive approach that I don't think you're getting the value, right? I think you can be more targeted and get a lot of the value.
Follow-up, Representative Norris?
Yeah, thanks, Chair Schumacher. And I think that's a really important point about having that risk management plan and being thoughtful across the state enterprise about, what are the appropriate policies and procedures for each type of payment, each type of grant. And then the last question, Chair Schumacher, and then I just have some brief comments. You mentioned kind of sharing data across the state enterprise and that you've kind of tried to facilitate some of that, but it's not really the role of the legislative auditor. So do I understand your assertion correctly that you do feel like it would be valuable to have some structure in place to facilitate that sharing of data, that sharing of best practices across the state enterprise?
Auditor Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Norris. I think that there is a role to share data about concerns, credible allegations. I think we need an infrastructure to share that information. I think agencies are doing a much better job of doing it since last session when the legislature gave them the authority to share information, but recognize it's a pretty new responsibility for them, which, you know, we could talk about that, but, you know, it's a great authority that you gave them, the ability now to share that information across agencies. There does need, I think, to be some structure put in place. I think it could be facilitated by, you know, a centralized entity to help facilitate that information sharing, who has insight into the different data systems. I mean, I think that's where we have been able to come in. In terms of sharing best practices and things like that, I think that role already exists, again, with MMB, with OGM. So to me, that piece is duplicative, but the new piece would be, again, I just keep thinking hub and spoke model in terms of sharing information about credible allegations of fraud, grantees who have not, you know, performed, and wanting to make sure the left hand knows about what the right hand knows.
Thank you.
Representative Norris.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Schumacher. So, yeah, I appreciate those insights, Auditor Randall, and I think what your responses illustrate is that, you know, this is a very complex discussion that requires a lot of nuance and making sure that we're being intentional about how we design some of these procedures and entities that are going to do our program integrity work, you know, which is, you know, why it's frustrating when I feel like a lot of this work is being, you know, so grossly mischaracterized, you know. Best practice establishment, supporting the agency inspectors general, and coming in and doing work for those agencies that don't have inspectors general, that data sharing, putting in place risk management plans. Those are all things that I am proposing to add to the role of the Office of the Inspector General. And quite frankly, you know, there are things that the GOP has voted against so far this session with regard to the Office of the Inspector General. And so, you know, I strongly reject the notion that the proposal that I've put forward is some wimpy proposal. In my view, and based on a lot of the testimony we've heard in this hearing and in others, you know, I think it strengthens the office and makes sure that it's ready to get down to the important work that it needs to do for Minnesotans on day one. Thank you, Chair Schumacher.
Thank you, Representative Norris, and I hope you appreciated the latitude that we offered you there. I have 3 minutes left and three people on the list, Representative Franson, Murphy, and Noor. Representative Franson.
Mine is just a quick question to the OLA. You mentioned that the legislature has some responsibility with putting in tighter language. Could you provide the legislature with examples of weak written legislation and how it could be approved for examples going forward? Okay, thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Randall. You know, in your introductory letter, you talked about we received full cooperation from the DHS and BHS while performing the audit. My question is, you know, they have an internal review or report that showed that they had 11% of their staff said that they were asked to do something illegal. They had another 13% that were asked to do something, you know, that was a problem for them to do. My question to you is, was there any window of opportunity for you to talk to any of these people? You have one example of something bad that happened, but did you get an opportunity to talk to a whistleblower or whistleblowers as part of your audit?
Ms. Lyson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. So during the course of our audit, you know, we don't disclose necessarily everything, every conversation that we have, but we do have ongoing conversations with the individuals running the program. So our goal in any audit that we ever perform is not to, you know, talk to leadership, but really talk to the people doing the job, the people doing the reconciliations, the people performing the monitoring procedures. So throughout the audit, we're talking to the individuals doing this, so they always have an opportunity to come to us and provide any information or any concerns they may have.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair.
Auditor Randall.
Sorry, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy. I just wanted to say that I have spoken with a number of whistleblowers over the past year or two. So we do have opportunity to speak with whistleblowers on a regular basis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Brief follow-up, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the OLA team. Thank you, Auditor Randall. One quick, look into the overview of the program. I know this was performance financial audit, not a program review. So I know some people may get confused. So how does this audit differ from the other audits that you do?
Auditor Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair. I apologize if you've heard me say this before. I have kind of a metaphor I use to explain the different work we do. And so if you imagine a barn, our performance auditors, like Ms. Stone and Ms. Lyson's team, they are mostly walking outside of the barn, checking the windows, looking at the hinges, seeing if there's shingles that are missing. Again, it's the basic maintenance, the basic internal controls that we're expecting. A program evaluation, those folks, that division, they go inside the barn. And it says, oh, okay, we're trying, the program is like, let's grow race horses. And they go inside the barn and they're like, well, there's a horse here. But, you know, I think if we want a racehorse, we need to give them better feed and we need some ventilation. Oh, and by the way, we can tell that a roof shingle is missing. But they're not doing the maintenance. It's more, how do we make sure this program is doing the best it can? And then our special reviews team is the folks who, like, the farmhand comes to the barn the next morning, the door's open, the horse is missing. Oh, my gosh, what happened to the horse? So those are the differences of what we do.
Follow-up, Representative Norton.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we don't have much time. Thank you.
All right. With that, the committee thanks you, auditors, for your time this morning and for the work that you do on behalf of the legislature, and I'm sure we'll be in touch. And with that, we are adjourned.